Sahanao bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavaritamastu ma vidvishavahai Om shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Didn't we? No. We're on page 48, no?
49.
Oh, I just forgot to move those. Where are we on 49?
On the footnote.
On the footnote. Okay. Okay. Popular page. This one. Okay. Footnote 27. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates on these instructions of Lord Krishna to Uddhava. Reveal to Narayan and others that I taught what I taught concerning bhakti and jnana, which has special discrimination. When they ask you, be completely engaged in my qualities such as intelligence, wit, omniscience, and ownership of all powers. By this I am giving you blessings in order to be qualified for assimilating all of this. Make the sages there surpass the worldly condition made of the three gunas. Having carried out my instructions, you will come to me. You will come close to me, brought to me by my power of yoga. Okay. So this is on the principle that the jiva takes on, what is it? The qualities like the Lord. What was that verse? The Smritis say that the jiva becomes like Brahman. So then we have to understand what that means, being like Brahman. Because we have to remember that for Krishna, being Brahman, that's not an exciting point. You know, being the supreme controller of all things, he being everything, these aren't for him very exciting. You know, like I'm saying, oh, you are your foot, you are your hand, you grasp, you let go of things. Right? Did you feel good? You know, it's like, so you have all these things. So, but for Krishna, it's always like that. Okay, for one day, 2 days, but for eternity? You understand? So for Krishna, then it's the interaction with the devotees. So that's why this principle of becoming like the Lord means in that principle of bhakti. Because the platform of jnana is actually, when it mentions it's hellish, it is, because you have nothing to do. Right? On the platform of karma, you have something to do. It means what you engage yourself in creates a hellish environment. Right? But we see that the Brahman then is a worse situation, because not only do you have you have nothing to do and you have no material desires to try to make it all happen. Does that make sense? I mean, is there some meaning in your life? Because I want to do this today. I want to control and enjoy in these particular ways today. Right? So then you have some drive. Right? Now, if we remove material desire, and so there isn't any material desire, right? Then what? Then we won't have that. You'll just have nothing. Right? Means there's no anxiety or problems coming up from that, but the point is since the soul is ananda, how is that going to be a happy situation? That's why we say the impersonalists and the Buddhists, they're atheists. Because they don't actually even accept their own nature. We say the killers of the soul, because that's not going to work out for the soul. They're not going to get anything from that. Understand? That's why we don't look at, what do you call it? Liberation in a very kind way. Because there's nothing there for the soul. It's just the existence of the soul. But if all you have is just existence, no activity, no interaction, no relationships, no sensual engagement, will that be nice? You know what I'm saying? Okay, maybe you're asleep. But the point is asleep, then you're not so much aware of it. But if you're awake, you understand? So that's the whole problem. It's not going to create very much usefulness. So, therefore, for people who are engaged like this, like these sages and everything like that, now they'll be attached to the mode of goodness, acting in that way, or coming to the point of pure goodness, but it's not in relationship to the Lord. So it's not going to... So when we say that living entity becomes like Brahman, doesn't mean he just becomes impersonal. Means he becomes like Brahman means he's established on the transcendental platform, full of all good qualities. Yes?
How can they be coming to the platform of pure goodness?
Because pure goodness means that there's no material, meaning in the way of no modes of nature, no material engagement or anything like that.
So it's
just a neutral state.
So it's not necessarily pure devotion?
No.
Okay.
Means, for us, when we talk about Vasudeva Sattva, we mean pure devotional service. But for the impersonalists, they can also get to that platform, and there's no devotional service. But because getting that platform, they won't remain, because the soul has nothing to do there. Mm-hmm. They will come back, and so a temporary nature, we never, you know, it's just like, let's say, those who are living eternally, and those who are not, right? So it does, those, whatever life is there in someone who's not living eternally, how important is that? The guy's the big king, he's the emperor of the world, and then after a moment, then who knows what he is? You understand? So like that, for just a moment, is there and then gone. You know, it's just like, you can make a show out of, a show meaning, you know, entertainment out of king for a day, or, you know, millionaire for, you know, like this. But the point is it's only today's show, right? Next week, you expect someone else to be king. Because it was just interesting, someone got this and that, but you don't count them as a king, because next week, they're just back to their ordinary life. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that no one takes it seriously in the spiritual realm. Here we'll take it seriously, you know. But in reality, if one has that, one won't take it seriously. So here is that he's giving this, his intelligence, his wit, omniscience, and ownership of all power. So he has all the different aspects that they are looking for, but it's him as a person. And so coming to that platform where that relationship with that Supreme Person is the drive in what you're doing, that's then what Uddhava will give to the sages at Bhadarika Ashrama. Does that make sense? So that's the specialness that's there. So these great, great personalities, they're, you know, trying to absorb themselves in transcendence. And the Lord being pleased with them, now he's sending Uddhava there to bring them to the devotional platform. Right? So that's there. They've gotten that benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And
is it that Uddhava is trying to be the sages?
Uddhava is?
Trying to be the sages.
Is trying to?
Associate with the sages.
Associate with the sages.
And therefore, the two factors that he spoke of, Anukrita and Anusanga, that is what is being spoken of over here.
Means he'll go give them association, and by that then they'll come up to that platform.
Imitate those qualities and then they'll come to the platform.
Yes, you can say. So that's the whole point of association. We just use the word association, but it has all the technical terms. Right? It means For when you get to the platform of the recommendations for pure devotional service, it's very simple. Associate with devotees, hear, chant, and remember about Krishna, engage in the service. That's all there is. Right? So it's very, very simple. But then the point comes out is that it's not that you can't technically define all those different things. Right? So, because this is the world of names, right? If your whole basis of your existence is about a name, not the substance of it or experience of it or that, just the names itself, then how do you define some simple thing or some fancy thing? Right? It's all about names. So that means the fancier the name, the more elevated it's seen. So does that make sense? So, you know, it's just like, okay, they grow the grapes in Southern California, like that, you know, and I can't even remember what it's called. Some funny kind of Italian name. It's not Galileo, but it's just a standard, really cheap wine. So it doesn't have any fancy names and all that, but if there's grown in some valley in France and all that, some fancy names that you can't even say, now suddenly it seems so much better. And it's not necessarily that the quality is any better. You know what I'm saying? You're taking grapes, squishing them up, and letting them rot, right? And then sticking them in a bottle. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. But because it has a fancy name. So in the same way, the academics, they have fancy names. You know what I'm saying? You know, like that. So whatever it is, if it gets more sophisticated, they have fancy names. So sometimes it's thought what we have is not that developed because in general, we don't use fancy names. Because there's no need to. We're not attached to fancy names. Not that we can't use fancy names. It's just that we don't. I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you need a dictionary to read every sentence. You know, like that. You take Brahma Samhita, basically you need to look up 5 words per page. You know, and that's if you have a decent vocabulary. You know, so That's the thing. So we can do that, but that's not about it. So here's these sages that it's all about these fancy names and technical things and logic and all these things. They have great qualities. They've come to the transcendental platform. But it's devotion to the Lord that's actually the point to be gained. Does that make sense? That's actually what one wants. All these other things aside, they're nice. But in reality, that's actually not the main point. Now, even that is that he has this knowledge, but it's not the knowledge of this devotion that's actually the point. Is here it says, by this I am giving you blessings in order to be qualified for assimilating all these. That's more important. He has the knowledge, but more important than having the knowledge is the next stage, which is assimilation. So that means he has the knowledge, he explains it to others, he practices it, and by that he gets assimilation. So that's nididhyasana. Mm-hmm. All right? So that's the whole point. Do you catch what I'm meaning here? I say, he assimilates it, by that he comes to that platform, he realizes it, and we all just sit there. As soon as I say nididhyasana, then the pens come out, we start writing. You understand? This is the point that we're talking. This is the point that Krishna is making to Uddhava about the sages. Is that as soon as there's a fancy word, then immediately we catch it. Right? Does that make sense? Now, we're using this for, gyan for categorization of things. Right? So, that categorization of things is how we're going to actually understand it. Because it's by that we are able to place things. And then we can see the hierarchy, and then we can see it coming to prema. Because prema is what we're trying to get to. But what we're saying is because of an interest in gyan, therefore things that have that gyan flavor will have more of an attraction than those that have more of a lay presentation. You know what I'm saying? So many times we hear that, not so much now, but in the past it's been said that comparing Prabhupada's writings to others' writings, that, you know, he's just giving the basics and then others are giving the whole elevated. But actually, he's giving the elevated, and these others that seem so scholarly, they're only giving basics, just they're using fancy words. Because they don't actually even understand what Prabhupada's giving, because if they did, it wouldn't be said. Does this make sense? So this is what. So the point is Gyan is used for that. So that's why he's going to these sages, and that because he taught Bhakti and Gyan. He's taught them both. 11th canto is all about Gyan, but how is its connection to Bhakti, and how to properly connect karma. So karma yoga, Gyana yoga, and you know, and how it's engaged in Bhakti. So that whole process that you can then take anyone through. So therefore, all the fancy words are there. Because it gives all the things so you know how to connect everything in a scientific way. So therefore, whatever one has, that attachment for karma, caste, that's not a problem. It's just taking it through to, how you say, that devotion to the Lord. That's what we're trying to get to. You get to that, that is the perfection of Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga. Because then it's actually Bhakti Yoga. That's why you see is that it talks about what it means whenever we talk about the gopis, it's always just the simple cowherd women, right? They don't know all the philosophy, they don't know all these fancy things. It means they're not great scholars. But we see is that when they come here and they have to explain things, they're the ones that can use all the fancy words. You know, in fact, fancy words come from them. Right? All these other people, they imitate them, but don't imitate the devotion, so they only catch the secondary attributes. Does that make sense? So, but for them, it's not that that's what's important. What's important is the bhakti, but they can use the technical. That's what then makes it nice. Does that make sense? Yeah? Like that. So in other words, we have to be able to give up our attachment for karma and jnana, at the same time still be able to use it just as efficiently, if not better. That's the point. In other words, we're using technical points of analytical philosophy and the metaphysics and all these things, not because we're attached to them, but because it's an efficient way to explain it. Yes?
Maharaj, that's why Krishna consciousness is said to be simple for the simple?
Yes. Yeah, it's simple for the simple. And because, and it has all that technical for those who are not simple. But the point is once someone comes through all that technical and actually realizes it, then they'll see it's that same simple. So who can explain Krishna consciousness to the simple in a simple way? Those who realized it. So those who have, they get beyond the bewilderment of the technicality, they can see it in a simple way. They can explain it simply. Does that make sense? And someone who is simple, they'll just explain it the way they understand it. And, you know, they're simple, and so they explain it simple, and other people will catch it. Right? Does that make sense? So, but if we're attached to all these different things, then it becomes a problem. Because then we think, no, unless it's this technical, it's not actually going to get. We use the technical just so the people are satisfied that it's scientific, it's logical, especially in the present age. It means previously they were pious, so therefore they're very elevated, very intelligent. You have to engage the intelligence, therefore the aspect of jnana within the process. But in the present day, then people pride themselves that because of their knowledge and in science and arts, that's what makes them civilized and that's what sets them apart from the animals. And so therefore, whoever is the most sophisticated in that, then is actually, but they're not even seeing up to the theistic levels of civilization, let alone to the devotional. Is that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Adhikarna 6. The person the size of the thumb. Pramita dikaranam. Sutra reference 1, 3, 24, and 25. Adhikarna Prakashika. Adhikarna 6 establishes that the Angushta Matra Purusha, thumb sized being, from Katha Upanishad is not the individual soul, but Brahman. And Brahman is described as having this measure because it dwells for the purpose of meditation in the heart of the devotee. Right? Because the soul is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, so thumb size can't mean the soul. And you can say, as Brahman is unlimited, so how can it be the thumb size? That's why they're saying it must be the soul, because it's limited. But the point is, he only takes that size by his internal potency for the meditation of the living entity on the soul. Is that what it says?
Huh. Here it is said Angushta Matram, that is the size of the thumb. And earlier we heard about Pradesha Matram,
basically same thing.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Pradesha is supposed to be twice the thumb, right?
But the point is it's... How do you say? Pradesha, there's not a measurement of just a thumb.
Pradesh is this, from the thumb to the
forefinger.
So it is twice approximately the size of the thumb.
Let's take that, okay? Right. And then put that here. That's your whole thumb. Thumb starts there. But it's easier to measure it that way. Okay? Yeah, we're not. It's not just this part. It means the thumb is the whole thing. Okay? If doubt is raised regarding the size of other animals' hearts, Vyasa replies that we are not concerned with them. It is human beings who are able to meditate, and therefore the measurement is given according to the human body. Right? Because it doesn't matter how big Paramatma is in the elephant's heart or in the, you know, microbe's heart, because they're not going to meditate anyway. So then what do you care about? You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point where we have to go beyond, right? It means the jigyasu simply wants to know. It's interesting, right? Because, no, but how big, why do you want, it's just interesting. No, that's not the point. The point is what's useful. That's the jnani. That's why the jnani is superior and actually is sustainable. Arta artarti jigyasu aren't sustainable, because as soon as the desire is fulfilled, one may go away. But if one wants to know the Lord from that, right, he's taking care of one's, you know, needs and that, then one, so, well, who is this person? That brings you to the point of the jnani. Right? So when trying to get beyond these ones, that's why then one has to learn to give up what is not useful. Right? Just because you can ask it doesn't mean it's useful. Just like little kids, how many whys do they ask? Okay, sit down here and do that. Why? Because it's good for you. Why? They'll just keep on going all day. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it goes beyond what's actually useful. Does that make sense? Yeah. Summary of Adhikarna 6, Vishaya. In the Katha Upanishad 1.2.12, the following words are read. A person the size of a thumb stands in the heart. He is the master of the past and the future. He does not fear. Right? So having no fear means the identity is clear, is eternal. So that means he has to be on the transcendental platform, because fear comes from being on the material platform. Because it's temporary, therefore there's fear. Right? Anything temporary is going to create fear, because it will go away. Right? I get money, I become fearful. Why? The money might go away. Right? So anything that's material, then there's always fear. So he has no fear, so there's no material. He's the master of the past and the future. We're not. We're simply controlled by them. Right? Because for him, there is no past or future. It's all him. Does that make sense? For us, it's gone. But for him, it's still him. Does that make sense? Because he's eternal, then that person who is still existing. The result of that is still existing. The experiences of still existing. Like that. Shamshaya, is the thumb-sized person a jiva or Lord Vishnu? So it seems they've dropped the idea that it'll be material energy. That didn't come up in this one, right? Purva Paksha, the person here is the Jiva because the Svetasvatara Upanishad 5:7-8 says, the ruler of breath moves about, impelled by his karma. He is the size of a thumb. He is splendid as the sun. Siddhanta, the conclusion follows, Shabdat Eva Brahmitaha, even though he is very small, this person is the Supreme Lord because of the words in the text. So in the text, then it's making this point, so that's what it's being made. Sutra 1:3-24. Shabdat Eva Pramitaha. Shabdat, because of the word, Eva, even, Pramitaha, limited. The person is Vishnu because of appropriate words in the text, describing the person as the size of the thumb. Right? They're taking it just that limitation, therefore that's the point. But here it's because the word's describing. He's as splendid as the sun. He is without, how you say, he is the master of past and future. He does not fear, so that's not describing the jiva, because that jiva who's endeavoring for self-realization doesn't have these qualities. Sutra Prakashika. The doubt concerning the identity of the person the size of the thumb is decided based on the person's description as master of the past and future. This disqualifies the jiva, right? Because that can't be the jiva, because he doesn't control these. Because if people could control these, then how would everything go? Right? I mean, we would think it would all go great, but the problem is if everybody's controlling the past and the future, just as you set up your future and all that and turn around to get something to enjoy it, you know, how you say you turn around to get the bucket with the ice and the bottle in it, when you turn back, it's changed because your daughter decided she wanted a different future there in the living room. And so it's not going to work out. Does that make sense? Shri Govinda Bhasya, Vishaya. In the Katha Upanishad, it is said, Angushta Mataram Purusho Madhya Atmani Tishtati Ishano Bhuta Bhavyasya Natato Jigupsate. The person, the size of a thumb, resides within the Atma. He is in control of past and future. After knowing him, one is not disturbed. Katha Upanishad 2:1-12. Could be, but he also resides within the soul itself. He's there as Paramatma, and he's also inside. That's why it says smaller than the smallest. So he's residing in 1,000, the tip of the hair, and he's outside as Paramatma. And as, you know, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and as Karanodakshay, you know, so. Shamshaya, the doubt is this: if the person the size of the thumb is the person the size of the thumb, the jiva or Vishnu? Purva Paksha, the Svetasvatara Upanishad says, Pranadi Paha Sas Charati Sva Karamabhir Angushta Matro Ravi Tulya Rupaha. The master of the prana, the size of the thumb, with a form like the sun, moves by his karmas. Therefore, this confirms that the person who is the size of a thumb is the jiva. Siddhanta, Shabdat Eva Pramitehe. The person is Vishnu because of appropriate words in the text describing the person who is the size of the thumb. The person the size of a thumb, Pramitehe, is Vishnu only. Why? Because of the words in the text Shabdat, Ishano Bhuta Bhav Yasya, is the master of past and future. It is not possible for the jiva, who is under the control of karma, to have this power. Right? So he's using a second verse, instead of confirming it from the same verse, he's using a different verse. And then by attributes there, trying to say, see, this applies to the jiva. But the point is why not use this verse itself? In this verse itself, it talks about the past and the future. That the jiva is not in control of. So if that's there, then we have to understand the other verse. We would have to look at it from that perspective. In other words, if we were looking at it that this is Vishnu, then we would have to look at it how to understand it in that way. But they're taking that's jiva, and then this one has some similar words, therefore this is jiva. Rather than, no, by these words that can't be jiva, it's Vishnu, therefore those words must also mean Vishnu. Right? So they're misapplying. It means you already have a text that explains it. Why bring in a different one until this one has been thoroughly discussed? So,
Maharaj, in the Purvapaksha, they're saying that it moves by his karmas, you know. So it's only the jiva, you know, who moves by the karmas, not the Paramatma. So that is what you meant, that...
No, but he moves by his karmas. But the point is
here is a jiva, like that's been spoken of.
Not necessarily. It may be, it may not be. But is he technically master of the prana? Is he this and that? So that's the whole thing, is you have to take everything. You can't just take one thing. But see, the master of his karmas means, is Krishna in control of what he does? Is the jiva in control of what he does? Is he master of his karma? He's controlled by his karma. So actually, master of his karma can't be the jiva either. Because the jiva, he performs an action, and then the reaction comes... He's not. If we were in control of our karma, would we get the reactions?
No.
So that's the whole thing. One has to see, if one appreciates it in a particular way, then one looks, how does this apply? How does this function? Does that make sense? Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. He was said in scripture to stand with the height of a thumb within the heart is the Supreme Lord, not the individual soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.12.8. He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. Footnote 28. Srila Prabhupada comments, he became visible to his devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, even in that awkward position, in the womb of his mother, in a shape just suitable for his vision. The Lord can become bigger than thousands of universes, and can become smaller than an atom at the same time. Merciful as he is, he becomes just suitable to the vision of the limited living being. He is unlimited. He is not limited by any measure of our calculation. He can become bigger than what we can think of, and he can become smaller than what we can conceive. But in all circumstances, he is the same all-powerful Lord. There is no difference between the thumb-like Vishnu in the womb of Uttara and the full-fledged Narayana in the Vaikuntha Dham, the kingdom of Godhead. He accepts the form of Archavigraha, worshipable deity, just to accept service from his different incapable devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.12.9. Okay, so the whole point is the size of the thumb. He's coming just so that it's suitable for the devotee to meditate on. Does that make sense? Right, so the size of the thumb, that's suitable to meditate on. Like that. Bigger than that, then takes on a different quality, becomes harder to meditate on. Sutra 1325. Hridya pekshaya tu manushyadikara tvat. Hridi, in the heart. Upekshaya, with relation to, indeed, manushya, of human beings. Adikaravat, because of the qualification. The Lord is said to be the size of a thumb because that is the size of the heart of humans, who are qualified for meditation in the heart. Sutra Prakashika. This sutra resolves further doubts concerning the size of the Lord in the jiva, Sri Govinda Bhashya. In the Katha Upanishad is said, how can the Lord be the size of a thumb? Hridya pekshaya tu manushyadikara tvat. The Lord is said to be the size of the thumb because he is the size of the heart of the humans, who are qualified for meditation in the heart. Yes. It goes back to that same point made by Vyas before. If your heart isn't smaller, then why are you worried? And two, are you an Astanga yogi that you're going to be meditating on the Lord in the heart? So if you are one, an Astanga yogi, practicing that and qualified to get yourself to dhyan, where you would be meditating on Vishnu, and two, your heart is smaller, then you might be worried about this point. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, but what if I was in Antarctica, you know, in the middle of winter and I put my boot on backwards? Is it something to worry about? Right? So unless you're there and this, then you worry about it. Otherwise, why you'd worry about it? The word two indicates a limited instance. The Lord is the size of a thumb only because the devotee meditates upon him in the heart, which is that size, right? So then the heart's that size, so if you have a smaller heart, then he would naturally be this size to fit in the heart. But we have to understand is, what does heart mean? Does it mean the muscle? Or it means the chitta? So that's the size of the thumb that's situated in the middle here. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes? Or the Lord actually appears in the heart with that size by his inconceivable power in response to the devotee's devotion. This is explained previously. Shamshaya. It is impossible to argue in this way because in different species the heart is of a different size. Siddhanta. The objection is answered by mentioning that this is in reference to humans, manushya. Though the scriptures are applied generally, they are meant for humans, since only humans have the capacity to worship. Since human bodies are of one type, there is nothing wrong in giving one size for the heart. Though animals like elephants, horses, and snakes may have similar sized hearts, they do not have the capacity for worship. Thus they are excluded by the word manushya. It is also said, right, so we stick to the words that are mentioned, and from that try to understand, rather than taking it out to something else. Because that's the general tendency. If we're discussing on the platform of Gyan, we use the speculative method to either support an argument or to get rid of an argument. So it's not actually about the logic itself. Right? It's just about what my feelings are, like that. What my view is, that I use this speculative method to prove. It's not that I'm actually using logic to find out what's the conclusion. I'm simply trying to establish what I want. That's why when someone says something and another person doesn't like it, generally their response is something quite extreme or absurd. Does that make sense? Because then it just throws it out. And then now you can discuss it on a different level. Understand? But the point is we have to discuss the points being made. Right? When that's all discussed, then that's there. That's why you see sometimes Prabhupada or the Acharyas in their when their comments, let us say a point's been made by the person with the doubt. Now the point that they make may be valid. And they'll support, yes, this is correct here and this is there. Just like we'll say, the impersonalists, they're transcendentalists because they're interested in transcendence. They can be situated on the transcendental platform. But, we'll point out, but they're temporary transcendentalists, so therefore we don't actually consider them transcendental. We don't just say, no, they're not transcendental. No, we say from the aspect that's being given, yes, they are. But from the broader picture and understanding, they're not. You understand? So we're able to accommodate what is correct, but because it's a bigger, the total picture that has to be seen, then you see that there's a problem. Right? You know, they can say, yes, okay, this aspect may, you could say, belongs to a jiva, but the point is, what about these other aspects in the verse? They don't. So therefore, since we have to take the whole context of the whole thing, then it's not talking about the jiva. That makes sense. Yeah. It is also said that the jiva is the size of a thumb. This is said only because the jiva is situated in the heart, and so it is metaphorically said to be of that size. Actually, the jiva is atomic in size because Shastra state that Balagra chata bhagasya. The jiva size is 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair. Sweta Sutvatara Upanishad 5.9. Therefore, the person who is the size of a thumb is Vishnu alone. So, using the same Sweta Sutvatara Upanishad that they're misapplying, it also then goes on to say the actual size of the thumb. So when we say the size of the thumb for the jiva, then we're also meaning simply the size of the heart. Because that's where the jiva is situated. So the mind is there, the intelligence is there, right? The false ego is there. So that's actually what makes up what the jiva thinks it is. It means the jiva is the jiva, but the jiva doesn't think it's the jiva. The jiva thinks it is the subtle body. And because that, then the subtle body is manifest the gross body, so the jiva is identifying with the gross body. Right? But you can say, so why don't we define him as the size of the body? Sometimes we do. But in general, that when the living entity leaves the body, then he goes in that, you know, thumb-sized heart, that to the next body. Right? Like that, and leaves this body. So the subtle body will go with them, but the gross body won't. So therefore, it would be more appropriate to define him the size of a thumb. If you're talking about his conditioning. If you're talking about the soul proper, he's 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Does that make sense? So depending upon how it's being defined, just like here is talking about the meditation of the human beings, therefore the Lord is that size. But otherwise, he's unlimited. So. Bhagavatam verse reference. The form of the Lord which is brilliant like lightning and in which Dhruva Maharaj in his mature yogic process was fully absorbed in meditation all of a sudden disappeared. Thus Dhruva was perturbed and his meditation broke. But as soon as he opened his eyes he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally present just as he had been seeing the Lord in his heart. Right? So he was sitting in the heart that size. Then he can't see him anymore. Then he opens his eyes because his meditation broke. Then he sees he's you know, now the size for interacting as human to human, right? Person to person. Does that make sense? Like that. So then that's how he takes these different sizes. Srila Prabhupada adds, when a devotee becomes mature in his prosecution of devotional service, he sees face to face the same Shyamasundara he thought of during the entire course of his devotional service. Since the Supreme Lord is absolute, the form within the heart of a devotee, the form in the temple and the original form in Vaikuntha, Vrindavan Dham, are all the same. They are not different from one another. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.2 purport. Right? So just because there's a size difference doesn't mean there's any difference in the Lord. That's the important point. For him, it is simply for, through his yoga maya, that for interacting with the living entities, he takes the various sizes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on Dhruva Maharaja's advanced state. The Lord, going there, entering the heart of Dhruva, who had his eyes closed in concentration, showed himself to Dhruva. Then he disappeared and stood before him externally. Seeing the Lord suddenly appear and disappear like lightning in his heart by intense concentration through advanced yoga meditation, he began to lament like a person who had lost a treasure, since he had seen the Lord near him. His samadhi was broken and he opened his eyes. He then saw the same Lord situated before him externally. Right? So that way, because if he had just experienced it came outside, and then he's in meditation, and then the Lord's there, you know, like that. And then he's still not bearing that, and he points to Garuda, go over and give him a nudge. And then it's, hey, you know, and oh, you know, it's like, so it wouldn't work out. But he's in the heart, then you know this is the same Lord. Plus, then he's there, then you become attracted, then he disappears, then that crosses, and then he sees the Lord. Right? So then the Lord chooses the best possible way to do all this. Right? Adhikarana 7. Concerning Devata's qualification for worship. Deva Adhikaranam. Sutra reference 1.3, 26-33. Adhikarana Prakashika. Adhikarana 7 and 8 form a sort of digression from the rest of the pada. They aim to resolve a question raised in the preceding Adhikarana concerning who is qualified for Brahma Vidya. So far, human beings were urged to meditate on the Lord, while animals were excluded. Adhikarana 8 determines that the demigods also possess this qualification, while Adhikarana 9 established that the sudras do not. Throughout this Adhikarana, the Purva Paksha opposing viewpoint is coming from the Karma Mimamsakas, right? Because before that was, means in the very beginning it was Karma Mimamsakas who were complaining, then it was the impersonalists, you know, up to now, and now again it'll go back into the Karma Mimamsakas. Summary of Adhikarana 7. Vishaya, in order to prove that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the person the size of a thumb, the Vedic scriptures were quoted to establish that it is human beings who have the right to meditate on the Supreme Person. That evidence may lead to the belief that human beings alone have the right to meditate on the Supreme Person. Now, by refuting that false belief, the right of others to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be proved. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10 says, whoever among the devas meditated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead attained the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whoever among the sages meditated upon him attained him. Whoever among the human beings meditated upon him attained him. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.16 also says, the devas meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the splendor of all splendors, and who is eternity and life.
This particular Adhikarana is speaking about how the devas are also eligible for worship.
Yes.
And it was then proved that human beings are already eligible for the meditation.
Yes.
So it automatically implies that devas are also, because devas are on a higher level and human beings are on a lower level?
Not necessarily, because human beings are, their business is, they perform the activities that get them to any other place within the universe. So everyone else is therefore absorbed in just the results of their karmas. You understand? So that's the consideration, because then if you're taking superior, but your rakshasas and yakshas are also superior to humans in that they have mystic powers and lifespans and physical strength and intelligence much greater. Does that make sense? So all those who live in the antariksha then generally have a greater capacity than humans. You know what I'm saying? So below humans is basically is then your animals. Right? So that might come up as a doubt. What exactly is their point? Because look at it like this. Now, if I'm doing all this meditation on the Lord and that here is a karma kandi, and what's my point of doing that meditation? What do I want?
I want to enjoy.
Now, if I get to the heavenly planets, and then as a demigod, I should be meditating upon the Lord. Where's my enjoyment going to be? Does that make sense? You work very hard at the job, then you get a 2-week paid vacation. But during that paid vacation, then you still have phone calls and emails and everything concerning work to deal with. Is it really a vacation?
Not really.
Yes, so therefore I'm meditating upon the Lord here to get the piety to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy. When I get there, then also I'm supposed to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're karmis. They may be smart karmis, they may be pious karmis, but they're karmis.
Yes.
Okay. Shamsai, is it possible for the devatas to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as human beings do, or is it not possible? Purva Paksha, because the devatas have no sense that they are not able to meditate. Because the devatas have no senses, they are not able to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indra and the other devas are beings created by mantras. They have no bodily senses. Because they have no senses, they have neither material desires nor spiritual renunciation. So here's another angle. So for them, they only exist as the manifestation of mantras that are there for them doing their worship. So then the problem comes is that if you elevate yourself to that platform, what are they going to enjoy if you're only a mantra? So just like the impersonalists, by their and through their intelligence, make themselves foolish, so these guys do also. Right. Siddhanta. The conclusion follows. Tad uparyapi bharadayanaha sambhavat. Being superior to humankind, the devas are able to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the opinion of Vyas.
Are they impersonalizing
demigods? Basically, see, they're all impersonalists, because it's just about them and fulfilling their desires. So everything is just, I chant the mantra, the deva is there. And so if I don't chant the mantra, they won't be there. So you see that there's a common theme that it's all about myself. I make things happen. You know, just like the Buddhists think. So I'm there, therefore the tree makes sound. If I'm not there, it doesn't make sound. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point, is that it all comes back to ourselves. It's just whether it has the flavor of karma, jnana, or, you know, voidism. You know, or the yogis and their all these things, they have their aspect, but it's just materialism. So materialism is one thing. It just has different flavors. Right? Just like in the spiritual world, transcendence is one thing, though it has different flavors. Right? Okay. So Sutra 1.3.26. Tad uparyapi bharadayana sambhavat. Tad, that. Upari, above. Api, also. Bharadayana. Vyasadev, sambhavat, because of being possible. It should be accepted that devatas who are above men also worship Brahman because they have bodies. That is Lord Bharadayana's opinion. Sutra Prakashika. Here, Srila Vyasadev answers the doubt concerning the demigods put forth by the Karmakanda Mimamsa philosophers. Akin to their mechanistic understanding of God, they similarly hold that demigods are thought forms of Vedic mantras, and that they lack the agency and impetus to worship the Lord. As a matter of fact, the demigods do lack gross bodies, but they nonetheless possess heavenly bodies and senses equipped to worship the Supreme Lord. So, just like the impersonalists, then they hear that about the Supreme doesn't have a material form, right, or a gross form, so they figure he's formless. So here, then, the Karmakandis, they also know that the demigods don't have a gross form, so then they think they are also formless. So it's only the mantras and all that for meditation and worship that there may be some form, but it's only the form of mantra. They don't understand that they just have a subtler body with subtler senses. Otherwise, if it's not subtler, why would they enjoy more? Because if it's the same gross body, they can't get anything out of it more than what we can get out of it. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. So that's the whole. Moreover, they are capable of assessing the fallibility of their own positions. And indeed, the Shruti is filled with examples of demigods performing tapasya in order to transcend swarga and achieve the Supreme. Right? But is that going to be the interest of the Karmakandi? No. Because that will be how to come to that higher platform. So their whole approach to the Veda is only going to be in support of their acts of enjoyment. That's all. It's not about getting freed from the material. Because that's their whole point, is that you don't need to, right? One would want to get freed from the material entanglement because of the disturbance of, bad reactions to bad karma. So then they have a simple solution. Only do good karma, only experience good reactions, right? So then if you always do good, then you're always going to be enjoying. But the problem is, are they enjoying fully? They have nice facilities, but there's always that anxiety and all these other things, because every action is covered by some fault. So there's always going to be some reaction. And two, even if they get all facility, it won't satisfy the soul. Right? Because they have to accept the position of the soul, otherwise how is the karma going to go on to next life? Right? So then that's where there's going to be a lack of satisfaction. So then after performing karma, when that doesn't work for them anymore, then they go for jnana and they become impersonalists. Right? So then the idea is that trying to shift them from the position earlier rather than wait for thousands or millions of years as a karmi and then thousands or millions of years as a jnani and then still waste the time. Right? Sri Govinda Bhashya, Vishaya. For proving that Brahman is the size of a thumb, it is mentioned that men are qualified for scriptures dealing with this description. By that statement, it seems that humans alone can worship the Lord. To refute this, the next Adhikarana begins. Brihadaranyaka says, Tad yo yo devanam pratya bhudhyata saeva tad abhavat tata rishinam tata manushyanam. All the devatas who meditated on the Lord attained him, and likewise did all the sages and humans. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10 Tad deva jyotisham jyotir ayur hopasate mritam. The devatas meditate on the Lord, who is the light of lights, who is life and immortality. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.16 Shamshaya. The doubt is this. Is worship of Brahman possible for devatas as it is for men, as mentioned in the scriptures? Purvapaksha. The worship is not possible for the devatas, since they do not have bodies and senses. They are made of mantra and do not have bodily senses. Lacking senses, they cannot meditate, nor can they hanker for renunciation of material enjoyment. And so this is their approach. So basically you can see is that all living entities who haven't taken up the theistic understanding of worship of the Lord in bhakti technically are all materialists and ultimately all atheistic. You understand? Because they don't actually understand the full nature of the Lord and the living entity. Right? So therefore they don't actually understand the creation. They'll understand up to a point. Just like any living entity understands up to a point. Like you have a house. The dog understands the house up to a point. But not beyond that. Like that. The cat also. Does that make sense? You know, like, yes.
Prabhupada, there's been instances where Prabhupada acknowledged or supported people that of other faiths. Like,
yes, up to what point? Means, like, say, for the karmis. We don't have a problem that they're following the Veda and they follow the Vedic lifestyle and they have faith in the Shastra, they have gurus, they do sadhana, they do all the different things. So as far as their practice of the Shastra, as far as their lifestyle, all these different things, we'll say that this is very nice. They're Brahmins, we'll accept that. The point is that, but their conclusion that they have based on the Shastra and that we'll say is faulty. So up to that point, they're superior to the animals, to those living entities that are sophisticated but are still on that animalistic platform, on a moig. They have science, they have arts, but it's still just about sense gratification. They're higher than those who have a moralistic concept of, of that is added to, so their extended sense gratification. So it's not just using arts and sciences for themselves, but for a greater social aspect and all that. That they're greater than them. Those who then have a theistic concept, but it's based on a material position that the Lord is material, is greater than them. Then you get to those who are, they have the theistic and they accept that there's the supreme and all that and controlling everything. But it won't be necessarily so developed. You know, so it's based on Shastra and everything like that, but it still has this materialistic concept. So that's where they're situated. So they're not better than those who have a more proper understanding of Brahman, and they're less than the devotees. But they're higher than all those other ones on Anamoy and Pranamoy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in that way, we'll appreciate that much that they're doing, that's appreciated.
Prabhupada's argument was more that they're not following properly when they're, because they're eating meat, so they're not even following.
That's another thing, but what I was giving example of those who are properly following.
Okay.
But if we're talking about just those who say that they are followers of the Veda and they're not really following very nicely, then that's there, but at least the sentiment is there. So the sentiment, at least they'll take it up. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you have your Hindu and you tell them, okay, that we're having a program on Janmashtami, there's a yogi there, who would ever like to take part, then they can, you know, let us know and all that, but you have to wear a dhoti and a chadar, you can't wear sewn cloth. So then they'll show up in the dhoti, chadar, the wives and saris, everybody's cool. Like that, because they do accept that Shastra has direction and all that. You understand? Because they accept the Veda. So to get them to follow it more nicely, that's not the problem. To follow all the rules and regulations of Shastra is not the problem for Hindus. Absolutely not at all. The problem for them may be keeping the focus on the Supreme Lord and not get distracted by the pious results that come from following. You understand? But that's like any living entity. You get some material facility, they get distracted. Does that make sense? But they have no problem with the lifestyle. They may have a problem with the philosophy that it's only Krishna. Well, what about, you know, but yeah, Shiva's nice and Ganesha's nice and everybody's nice. And they'll have a problem there. But as far as getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, taking a bath, putting on tilak, that they'll have zero problem. You know what I'm saying? Well, then you see the others that in the West, they'll accept the philosophy, but the culture, then that's like, you know, hey, we're Westerners, why we got to do this? You know what I'm saying? And then they'll say, oh, these Hindus. Yeah, but this is, philosophically, yeah, you can say, oh, these Hindus. But when it comes to the lifestyle, oh, these, you know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that's the point. Now, of the two, understanding Krishna as supreme, that's more important. But the point is, what's the lifestyle of someone who understands that? The two go together. But that's the problem. Each one wants only part of it and rejects the other. In other words, they accept Krishna as philosophically, but not his lifestyle. Krishna gets up in the morning. He takes a bath. He does all these things. And we don't accept that.
It means you don't accept him.
Yeah. The point is that you seriously, like you follow that lifestyle. Let's say someone appreciates sports. Now, the lifestyle that sportsmen live, they will be inclined towards that. They get up early in the morning, go for a run, you know, they drink X amount of water, they're careful about their diet in certain ways, they do certain things that all improves their health. Someone who is interested in sports would be inclined towards that. So then, if Krishna has a lifestyle and the Vaishnava, why wouldn't we be interested in that if we're interested in Krishna? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for me it makes sense.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is that's because if culture makes sense, these things do. If culture doesn't make sense, these don't.
Yeah.
Because they'll take it, no, but we're cultured, see, we're sophisticated, we have science, we have arts. But that's already been stated that is the first stage of civilization where they think that they're superior because they have arts and science, though they're still on the platform of Anamoy. They're not on the platform even of Pranamoy. Pranamoy, then it has to be, you know, everybody, and everybody's going to get some benefit. Like that.
They're just not catching the whole picture.
No. Like that. So it's just a matter of time and association, and it's caught. It's important. Because when the sutra says that the jiva attains the qualities like Brahman, means then you attain those qualities, that lifestyle, that understanding, that way, method of dealing, that's all the same. So one has to come to that platform to associate with the Lord. So the gopis, their only interest, they forget about their bodies. They forget about their mind, and they just serve the Lord. But we're making a philosophy, no, I am this body, I am this mind, and therefore I have the right to act upon this platform. Rather than I'm trying to forget this and be absorbed. But at the same time forgetting, they don't give up doing the activities that, that are natural for the particular form and situation they're in. But that's because of their desire. Their desire is to serve Krishna in that way, therefore these forms then that manifest. So because we have a conditioned desire, therefore our forms then manifest. So what's the principle? Engaging that in the Lord's service. Gopis do gopi stuff. Mother Jashoda does Mother Jashoda stuff. The cowherd boys do cowherd boy stuff. The cows do cow stuff. Right? But they become completely forgetting about the attachments and that would put them in that place. So their attachments just to Krishna. Right? So the principle here is that we're following in the footsteps of that. Right? We're trying to develop that kind of attitude that we have a particular conditioning, but it's about using it to please Krishna. So the focus is on pleasing Krishna. Mm. And it's just how much is required to make the conditioning function to work for Krishna. But then to say is no, the conditioning takes on its own life. You know, that's like Frankenstein. You know? Yeah. Does that make sense? Yes.
I'm thinking that both Hindus and the Westerners, their main concern is the sat aspect of the absolute. Although Westerners, they have a bit of cheat because of their inclination towards philosophy, the proper way.
Yes.
But the Hindus, because of the culture, they enjoy more Anand.
Yes.
So both incomplete in that sense. But sat is the worry is always there.
Yeah, no, sat's always their existence and their identity and everything like that. Yeah.
For both parties.
Yes, yes. I mean, they're both trying to enjoy, but one's actually following the process that can get some material enjoyment, while the other one is not following the process to get enjoyment. Because otherwise, it should be there's more enjoyment now with time goes. It's just like anybody, it's just like people eat nowadays, but do they talk much about it? I mean, they'll take pictures on Instagram. It looks fabulous, but does it actually have any taste? That's another thing. You know, but before people would talk about how things tasted, not how they looked. You know, they had fabulous taste like that. You know, so that's a problem. You know, is that the quality of enjoyment is actually going down, but they're thinking that it's going up. So it's just like that's the problem. Is okay, Siddhanta. Tat uparyapi vararayana sambhavat. It should be accepted that devatas, who are above men, also worship Brahman because they have bodies. That is Lord Vararayana's opinion. It should be accepted that devatas, who are above men, tat upari, also worship Brahman. That is Lord Vararayana's opinion. Why? Because they are capable, sambhavat. Since they have bodies. This is recognized by humans, the Puranas, Itihasas, Upanishads, and the mantra portion of the Vedas. They are capable of worship because they have celestial bodies and senses, right? So it says the mantra portion of the Vedas, right? That's what we'll call as the Veda, the Samhita. Now, in the Brahmana, it's not going to be discussing those things, so all that's going to be discussed is what ritual and what mantras to be performed for worshiping, what devata for what, you know, reason. So in that case, the smartas are going to put more emphasis on the brahmanas than on the other parts. In other words, the samhita is there, but only because then it can be used in the brahmanas too for the ritualistic ceremonies to gain the results they want. So in that case, then their view of the demigods is only going to be as mantras, because that's their connection with the demigod is through that mantra. And the demigod manifests by that mantra. But they don't understand that they have forms beyond that. So they are there in their forms in the heavenly planets, and they are also there in a manifestation of mantra when you properly authorized person in the authorized way chants the mantra. Does that make sense? So, because they're only looking at it from the brahmanas, because one could say, well, where do they get this concept from? From the brahmanas. But it's not that the brahmanas are explaining philosophy. It's just they've come up with that understanding from there. The Upanishads explain the philosophy. Does that make sense? But because Purva Mimamsa means it's only about the Samhita and its application to Brahmanas. They're not looking at the metaphysical and the transcendental points of the Aranyakas and Upanishads. They are capable of worship because they have celestial bodies and senses. They can also renounce their state of power because they realize that their powers are insignificant and temporary. Smriti says, because one could say, even if they meditate, then they're stuck in their position. No, they can even give that up and take up devotional service. Just, you don't hear it so often. There are instances, but generally you don't hear of it so much. Na kevalam dvija shreshta narake dukha parati. Swarge pi yata bhitasya ksha yishnor nasti nir vritti. O best of the twice born, suffering exists not only in hell, but also in swarga. There is no cessation of fear of destructible objects. Vishnu Puran 6.5.50. Right. So it's in the heavenly planets, things are temporary also. They're just longer. You know, they just don't get old. They just disappear. You know what I'm saying? You know, your associate doesn't get old. He just one day is not there anymore because his karma ran out. But the point is things are temporary there. So because of that, then says, because of this, the devatas hanker for Brahman as well. For they have heard that Brahman is pure, eternal bliss. It is said that the devatas accept brahmacharya in order to gain knowledge. Right, so they may be doing this on a regular basis, or they may be doing this at certain times. Like you see something comes up and it changes their mood, and then they take this up. Or they may take it up, you know, at that point, and then later get distracted again. Or they may take it up and be fixed in that. Like, I'm not sure who it was. I think Nalukuvar and Manigriva, after they met Krishna, then they became devotees and maintained their position. I think there's some others, the Ashwini Kumaras and a few others, that then they take to that and then they just maintain that. Does that make sense? So something came up that made them aware of the temporariness or like this, and so then taking up devotional service, then they became fixed. Like that. Yes, yeah, rare, but it can be done. But here is that Smarta is saying it's not possible. But we're saying, no, it is. It is possible. Tatraya prajapatya prajapatau pitari brahmacharyam ushur deva manushya asuraha. The offspring of Prajapati, devatas, humans and demons practice brahmacharya with their father Prajapati. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 5.2.1. Eka satam ha vai varshani maghava prajapatau brahmacharyam uvasa. Indra practiced brahmacharya with Prajapati for 100 years. Chandogya Upanishad 8.11.3. Since the devatas are capable, they are qualified for worshipping Brahman. Right? So they have forms, they can worship the Lord, they have an interest, and they can perform the brahmacharya in which they are performing that meditation. So then so that makes them qualified. Bhagavatam verse reference. The devatas likewise meditate upon the Supreme Lord because they are his devotees and are not thought forms of Vedic mantras, as the Karma Mimamsa philosophers believe. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.8.20. Suniti continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualifications to create this universe. Although he is unborn and he is the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life air, prana. Excellent. Very good. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.